Translation. Your father, brother, well-wishers, and sons are all dead and passed away. You yourself have expended the major portion of your life. Your body is now overtaken by invalidity, and you are living in the home of another. Purport given by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. The king is reminded of his precarious condition, influenced by cruel time and by his past experience. He should have been more intelligent to see what was going to happen to his own life. His father, Vijitravirya, died long ago when he and his younger brothers were all little children. And it was due to the care and kindness of Bhishmadev that they were properly brought up. Then again, his brother, Pandu, died also. Then, in the battle of Kurukshetra, his 100 sons and his grandsons all died, along with all other well-wishers, like Bhishmadev, Dronacharya, Karna, and many other kings and friends. So he had lost all men and money, and now he was living at the mercy of his nephew, whom he had put into troubles of various types. And despite all these reverses, he thought that he would prolong his life more and more. Vidura wanted to point out to Dhritarashtra that everyone has to protect himself by his action and the grace of the Lord. One has to execute his duty faithfully, depending for the result on the supreme authority. No friend, no children, no father, no brother, no state, and no one else can protect a person who is not protected by the supreme Lord. One should therefore seek the protection of the supreme Lord, for the human form of life is meant for seeking that protection. He was warned of his precarious conditions more and more by the following words. So again, the verse, Priti Bhratti Suhit Putra Hataste Vigatam Vayam Atmacha Jaraya Grasta Parageham Upasase. Your father, brother, well-wishers and sons are all dead and passed away. You yourself have expended the major portion of your life. Your body is now overtaken by invalidity and you are living in the home of another. Okay, Hare Krishna. So, and also Hare Krishna to everyone who's also viewing from their homes. Hope you're all keeping nice and safe and warm. Our senior Mataji at the manor, Her Grace Jagat Priya Mataji, was meant to give this class. So I'm literally a last-minute replacement because right now we have a skeletal crew at the manor. So therefore, I'm here sitting in the Vyasasan as opposed to other more qualified devotees. The katha must go on. So I'll do my best to present it and forgive me for any mistakes I make in the process. So what we can see from this verse is Dhritarashtra's Jnana Sina, a moment coming. So it's said that in the Bhagavad Gita that the knowledge that is portrayed in the Gita, that knowledge that Krishna gives can be metaphorically described in certain ways. One is Jnana Dipena, right? Like a lamp illuminating nicely from the heart. One is Jnana Plava, like a boat that's carrying you across the ocean of, you know, material birth and death. One is Jnana Dipena, Jnana Plava, I can't remember the other one. But another one is Jnana Asina, meaning that it's a katsu, like a sword. We often find in all our spiritual lives that there will come a time when we have to be cut with the sword of knowledge. Right? When one is looking at this verse, it reminds one of also in the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjun had his moment of being cut with a sword, when Krishna tells him that you are being weak, you're being impotent, rise up and do your duty properly. You know, really chastising. So the same way here, Dhritarashtra is also having his sword-like cut moment right now. And obviously in this case, instead of being cut by Krishna himself, he's been cut by his dear half-brother, Vidura. So the other day, I remember a couple of weeks ago when Sutapa was giving class, and he said that, when one is looking at the situation right now with the whole virus and everything, that sometimes we actually need a disaster to wake us up, right? It's even for devotees and non-devotees alike. It's the same here. If you look at Dhritarashtra's life so far, he has lost everything. All his sons have been slaughtered in the war. He's lost all his prestige, his status. Everything's finished. He has nothing. And basically, his life has become a disaster. But you know, in the midst of disasters, we can have blessings in disguise. Okay? The disaster is like a wake-up call. And the wake-up call, but there are two things needed. One is a disaster to have a wake-up call. And the Buddha Bhavana Prabhu is saying that along with the disaster, what you also need is some sukriti. Right? Because you might get a lot of people going through disasters. Doesn't mean that they'll wake up though. They'll still probably just go along with the old ways. You need some sort of pious blessing, something that will aid you in that wake-up call. That, look, there's a disaster. Now, let's take a step back and see how you can view it. In Dhritarashtra's case, thankfully, he had his sukriti in the form of Vidura. Vidura was his sukriti. And Vidura one that was actually going to aid him in his wake-up call. So from this we can see that Vidura is now giving him the right sense of how to deal with this and actually see the whole of existence in the right way. In the Bhagavad Gita it says, Yehi samsparsa ja boga dukha yonaya evate adyantavanta konteya na te shuramate buddha. Right, the intelligent man does not take part in the sources of misery which are arising from the life, from the birth and death. So again, this is something that Vidura is telling Dhritarashtra again and again. Now it's interesting that if you look at what he's telling Vidura here, that you have wasted the major part of your life, your body has become old, and you are living in the home of another. It's interesting he's saying here, you're living in the home of another. Sometimes great Vaishnavas, they'll take the gentle approach when they're, you know, guiding people, and sometimes they'll take the cutting approach, like we mentioned, the Jnana Asina approach, right? The sword. But even when they're taking the Jnana Asina approach, the Vaishnavas themselves, they never ever lose their temper. They never lose their own discrimination. So even within this, he's still looking at what's the best way to penetrate into Dhritarashtra's stubbornness. So it's interesting, he's saying that you are living in the home of another, right? Like a charity case. So again, he's looking at his psychophysical nature. Dhritarashtra is still in the body of a Kshatriya. For a Kshatriya to be considered a charity case is the biggest insult. Because you know, Kshatriya means Purusha Bhav, right? They have the most Purusha Bhav of all the different Varnas. So for them to be seen as a charity is the biggest insult. So he's actually still using his psychophysical conditioning against him for the higher principle. Just like Krishna did the same with Arjuna in chapter 2, when he said to him that, look, do your duty properly, you'll still get a place in the heavenly planets, your reputation on earth will still be restored. Now, on absolute principle, it doesn't matter, isn't it, whether you go to heavenly planets or reputation here, because on a transcendental perspective, none of these things matter. But sometimes we see that spiritualists will use your material sensibilities to hit home the message, and they bring you up to a higher level. It's the same thing which Vidura is doing here with Dhritarashtra, insulting him, but even the insults are being done with intelligence. It's not just a sledgehammer approach. He's looking at all the different things that actually, penetrate into Dhritarashtra's mind. Okay, and this is actually real protection, real compassion. Sometimes when we protect people, we try to give them kind words. Even as Vaishnavas, we may try and give them some kind words and things. But sometimes one has to be tough. And when there's a wake-up call coming, then one has to be tough. Prabhupada, if you look at his conversations, he did the same thing when he's preaching to people. With some people, he will judge what kind of person they are and what they need, right? And some people, he'll just lay it down, like, you know, on the line, how it's meant to be, okay? Sometimes when you go through the tough advice and the tough experiences, you actually end up remembering them more than the gentle things. Yesterday, after the feast, me and Gopinath were talking about our days on Sankirtan, because we did a marathon together 2 years ago. And I was reflecting how what my worst day was in Bournemouth, right? There's a town called Bournemouth in the south of England. And it was soaking, like I was soaked to the bone. I wasn't dressed properly. It was like literally torrential that day. It was the worst day. And a few days later, I had my best day in Bournemouth. In fact, my personal bests have always been in Bournemouth. But when I look back on it, I remember that day, the worst day, with more clarity than my best days. And the reason is because that day, I was doing the yajna, And it was simply for Krishna. Because when you're having a best day on books, there is a bit of sense gratification involved because you're doing so many books and there is a pleasure from giving out loads of books. Spiritual pleasure, of course, is there, but there is also material pleasure of just giving out loads of books. It feels good. But when you're giving out nothing and you're soaked to the bone and literally you're shivering and your hands have gone numb, and literally I was thinking to myself that day, there is no motivation for me to be out there. I'm only doing this for the movement. Okay, I'm just doing this for the yajna. Even there is no fruity result in me doing this for the movement because I'm not even giving out any books, right? But then you realize that actually sometimes the tough experiences, they actually the ones that actually really actually build up the spiritual realizations. Okay, so again, same thing here. What Vidura is saying to Dhritarashtra, he's giving it to him hard, and he's telling that all your people around you, they're all dead and passed away. Sometimes we think that, you know, this won't happen. You know, remember in the Mahabharata, there's this bit when this yaksha, he traps Yudhishthir and his brothers. He kind of gets them trapped in this lake situation. And then the yaksha asks Yudhishthir, what's the most strangest phenomenon in the world for human beings? And Yudhishthir goes, Ahan yahani bhutani gachanti yamalayam. Kim ascharyam ataparam, that everywhere I look around me, I see millions of living entities that are dying left, right, and center. But I'm thinking that it's not going to happen to me, right? Isn't this our phenomena as well? We see this happening all around us. Obviously, now with the current situation, we might be reflecting on it a bit more, especially now that obviously you know, with devotees and everything. But generally, as we all know, what happens is once the intense period goes away and we get back to normality, then, you know, suddenly it becomes in the back again, isn't it? So same thing here. Vidura is trying to make Dhritarashtra realize that now is your time. This is your wake-up call, okay? Stop trying to prolong your situation here. Yeah, putting yourself in a further degraded position. As devotees, we often may know this philosophically. Srila Prabhupada keeps telling us again and again in the purports, right? You are not the body, you are not the body, you are not the body. If you look at most of Prabhupada's conversations, he doesn't tend to go into too much esoteric pastimes. He keeps on the basics because he knows that's what we need to know. But you know, even for devotees, the prolonging of our material conditionings, it will manifest itself in subtle ways. For example, we come to devotional service, we know that that's it, we're going to give ourselves to Krishna, go back to Godhead. That's our main aim. But once you come to devotional service, then we start to experience other peripheral things along with our bhakti. And they can also be a way of trapping us materially, right? We know that there are different types of anarthas, previously performed pious activities can trap us. Previously performed impious activities can trap us, right? Offenses to devotees can trap us. One classic way in which we can get trapped is what is called bhakti yota. This is the perks that we get within our devotion, our puja, laugh, pratishtha, our profit, the adoration, the distinction that we get whilst we're in our bhakti. For example, the position we may get as a manager, as a preacher, as a kirtaniya, even something like as a great cook, known for doing great dramas, or known for setting up great projects. All these little things are also different ways in which they are prolonged. They may come externally, it could be looking like you're doing bhakti, but internally we still have to keep in mind that even this situation is going to finish one day. You know, even this situation is going to finish. We're going to have to let even this go. Even our services, we know the initial stage. They say that when you come to Krishna consciousness, one of the best things is when you find a service that you like doing and you do it for Krishna. Wonderful. That is good for the initial stages. But at one point, when you get past, sakam karma bhakti or nishkam karma bhakti, at one point when you get to ananya bhakti, when it's just pure bhakti, you're going to even have to give up those services that you like and just rely on whatever Krishna wants you to do. Right? And the same way here, Vidura is giving the same thing to Krishna. Our services, our position, our status, everything has to go. It kind of reminds me of how those who are really highly elevated Vaishnavas, they don't give two hoots about their status. And one person that comes to mind is Gaur Krishna Das Babaji. I'm sure some of you may have heard of him. He's one of the great acharyas. He's actually obviously up there. He's the guru of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj. You know, he didn't give any care for any status whatsoever, that just to avoid any kind of attention from his followers, he deliberately went to actually do his sadhana in latrine areas and even in the corridors of brothels and things. You know, like the most degraded area where people get, you know, think this is a scandal. Oh my God, he's fallen down. He doesn't care, because for him, it's gone beyond all that as well. Okay. So another thing that is also being said in this verse as well is that, again, and the same thing which Vidura is saying here, that you are living in the home of another. In other words, you're like a fake leader. You're acting like you're a king, but you're not actually a king. And again, I remember Prabhupada once saying, it's better to be a sweeper than a fake, a fake brahmana. I think there's a purport in the Bhagavad Gita where Prabhupada says that. So it's best to actually acknowledge the reality of a situation, do what is practical. Okay? And what Vidura is also saying here is that we ultimately have no protection in our lives, just our dharma and Krishna. That's all we have. Everything else is fallible soldiers, our family, support systems, everything. Nowadays, people may, like, for example, the current situation, people might, I'm sure that the leaders are trying to create some sort of sophisticated technological approach to try and solve the situation. It might have some initial results, it may not, but ultimately, our only actual shelter is our dharma, which obviously has been discussed quite a lot in the last few classes, and of course, Krishna himself. Ekale Ishwar Krishna Arashava Bhritto Yarayache Nacha Shetayache Korenitto. Lord Krishna alone is a supreme controller, and all others are his servants. And if Krishna wants to kill you, nothing can save you. And if Krishna wants to save you, nothing can kill you. Okay? So it's interesting. There's a nice folk tale that is actually, I want to just relate here. This is from the Mahabharata. And it's something that Vidura says to Dhritarashtra around this period when he's basically chastising him heavily. And he said that your situation is like, I'm sure there's a famous story, I'm so sure some of you have heard it. Your situation is like that of the prince on a horseback. You've heard of the prince on a horseback tale, right? There was a prince, he's riding on his white horse, right, galloping through the forest. And riding very high and mighty, very proud. And then suddenly from behind, there's a tiger that starts coming running after him. So now you can imagine that the prince is really, really afraid. So he's, like moving his horse more and more. At that point, the horse buckles. The prince flies and basically lands in a well. But just before he falls down into the well, he managed to grab onto a branch. And then the tiger comes looming over the well. And the branch is very like a thin branch. He's hanging on for dear life. And whilst he's hanging along on the branch, he hears a hissing sound from the bottom of the well. So what do you think the hissing sound is? What hisses? A snake, obviously, yeah. So a big python is coming from the bottom. He's in the well with a branch and there's a tiger on top. Bit of a precarious condition. Just like Prabhupada said here, the king is reminded of his precarious condition. Right? Huh? Yeah, I'm coming to that. So then, as he's doing that, then there's also a scratching sound that's going on at the root of the branch. There are two mice, a black mouse and a white mouse, that are just nibbling away at the branch. And on top of that, as Leo Prabhu mentioned, there's on top of the branch, there's also a beehive. And the beehive's getting shaken. And all the bees are coming out of the beehive and they're getting annoyed. And you know what bees do when they get annoyed? So they're starting to sting this prince. And in the midst of it all, there's some drops of honey that are coming out. So just imagine, right? A prince, he's stuck hanging on a branch. He's got a python coming from the bottom. He's got a tiger coming from the top. He's got two mice nibbling away at the branch that he's hanging on to. And he's got bees stinging up at the same time. And at the same time, some drops of honey are coming. So, what's the horse? What does the horse represent here? So he's riding high, right? Just like we ride high on our pride, right? And what happens is after pride comes the fall, right? The horse represents the pride, the ahankar of each person. The prince represents what? us, yes, the self, right? Then he's going into the well. The well is like the dark well of material existence. The tiger that's coming from behind, what's the tiger representing? Huh? Time, right? And then you've got the snake coming from the bottom, that's representing death, right? Time and death bringing you closer to the final stage. And then him hanging onto that branch, what does a branch represent? That hanging onto the branch. Yeah, it's basically hanging on for dear life to this material body, right? And then the black mouse and the white mouse. Day and night, each day and each night, right? Your life has been taken away from you, right? And then you got the bees that are stinging you. What are they representing? They're representing the threefold miseries. The miseries from the body, the miseries from the mind, the miseries from material nature, right? Everything, actually, if you look at every single misery in this world, you can relate to it, right? When we have, issues with people, coronavirus, this situation, what kind of misery category did this come under? Misery from material nature, right? It's the Adidevika. It's the Adidevika, classic Adidevika example. So like this is going on, right? And in the middle, he's got the little drops of honey that are coming in. And you know what this prince is doing? He's basically screwed, right? In one sense, he's precarious condition. Still, he's sticking his tongue out, trying to taste the little drops of honey. This is the situation of Dhritarashtra. He's there. He has got nothing. And I'll tell you right now, as the next few sessions come up, the next few classes, Vidura gets even more heavier with what he has to say to Dhritarashtra. So Dhritarashtra is finished. He's finishing. But still, he's clinging on to whatever little kind of like, you know, useless kind of like material situation he's in. Okay? So this is a classic case of what Vidura is trying to give to Dhritarashtra. And you can actually see from the example, if you look at Vidura and Dhritarashtra, in one sense, they're like the perfect comparative analysis. They were both born around the same time, in the same family. They're practically brothers, and they're literally actually half brothers, right? They've got the same father, Vyasadeva, different mothers. But look at the way they've dealt with life. They both had actually, things that go against them. Like what was the thing that was always against Dhritarashtra in his life? That always held him back, so to speak. His blindness, right? And if you look at through his whole life, he always complained about his blindness. I'm blind, I can't be king, I should be the rightful king, I'm the eldest brother, but I'm being held back because I'm blind, and all this kind of stuff. And I've been discriminated because I'm blind, and all this kind of stuff. And I'm so strong, Dhritarashtra is known for his strength, but because I'm blind, I can't fight. All these things, he always moaned and complained about his blindness. And that became a source of attachment for him, okay? And the problem is that the kingdom around him, this is something that actually Govinda Prabhu mentions in a seminar, that the kingdom gave him so much sympathy, so much care, but it wasn't enough to rehabilitate him from his degraded mental conditioning. So it says that when you give people compassion, you have to also give them the training and the tools to deal with that sympathetic situation. Otherwise, what happens? You can end up breeding narcissists. So Dhritarashtra was actually developing narcissistic tendencies because he was so wallowing in his own self-pity that what happens, the more you wallow in your own self-pity, you end up feeling that the world owes you something, right? And it becomes all about you. Right? It's never about is. And the best way is actually you have to then come out of yourself. You have to come out of your own situation. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was once saying in his Spiritual Warrior book that, you know, the best way to get rid of your own personal depressions is give more love to others. When you restrict yourself from giving love to others, then you actually end up becoming more depressed in yourself, right? So this is what's happening with Dhritarashtra. Whereas if you look at someone like Vidura, what did he do? He also had something working against him. What was that? For those of you who know a bit about Vidura. Das Pandu. Pandu was pale. Birth, right? Actually, out of all the three brothers, Dhritarashtra, Pandu, and Vidura, Vidura was actually the most intelligent. He was known for his wisdom. He was the most wise out of all of them, actually. It's said that when the three boys were born, Vyasadeva said that they were known for three attributes. Dhritarashtra was known for his strength, Pandu was known for his leadership skills, and Vidura was known for his wisdom. In one sense, when Pandu obviously left the world, Vidura, in one sense, you can say he should have been the king. He would have been the best king. He was devotional, wise, politically alert, as well as spiritually advanced and socially sensitive. But his birth works against him because his mother was a sudrani, a maidservant. But what was Vidura's attitude? Did he complain about it? Did he think to himself that, no, oh, what do I do? Did he like become bitter that I should have been the king? I'm the best quality king. Instead, they put some, you know, some plonker like Dhritarashtra on the throne. No. If anything, he was always supportive and always giving Dhritarashtra all the support that he could give. So his mood was that, look, we're all dealt certain cards in life. It's not about complaining about the set of cards you've got, but dealing with it in the right way. This is the mood of a Vaishnav. You deal with the cards that you've received in the right way. Okay? We've all got our karma, right? It's not about complaining about our karma. You know the classic question, why do bad? Why are these things happening to me? Right? Best is you're in a situation. There are various factors that contributed towards it. But the main thing is, how do you deal with it? And this reminds me of a nice verse actually from the Bhagavatam 10th canto. I'll read a very famous verse. Tattenu kampam shu shamik shamano bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam. Sri Sri Radha Gokulanda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Sri Sri Gonitai ki. So I'll just finish that verse. Hridvag vapurbi vidadham namaste jiveta yo mukti padasa dayabak. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him. And this is the key thing. Pay attention to this bit. This is really good. All the while patiently suffering the reactions of his past misdeeds and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words and body is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. It's interesting. You know what Prabhupada says in the purport, in the first paragraph? He says, all you have to do, literally all we have to do is just stay alive in Krishna consciousness and the kingdom of God will come to us. That's all you need to do. It kind of reminds me actually when Sutapa used to tell me a few years back that, you know, like, because you know, obviously Sutapa's known for his greatness in various aspects of devotional life. And then he was saying to us that, look, all I did, I'm just sticking around. And as I stick around, then things happen. So all we have to do is just stick around in Krishna consciousness and things will naturally happen. The qualities and stuff that we need and all that, right? So obviously empowerment is there and, you know, everything like that and how much you reciprocate. But Prabhupada's literally saying all you need to do is just remain alive in KC. That's it. It's very simple. Just chant, read, take prasadam and just talk about Krishna to others in wherever you can. And that's it. Done. Right? This is what Vidura did. He basically just kept his life very simple. And in the process, he's actually now known as one of the greatest devotees in the world. I mean, he's not just known as a great statesman, one of the best advisors in the history of mankind, because the way he guided the Pandavas through so many different incidences in Mahabharata, which we don't have time to go into right now, was just like a masterclass in statesmanship and political craftsmanship. But at the same time, he was known for being an amazing devotee to the point where actually, this is something that's mentioned in the Mahabharata. I'm not sure if it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. I don't know if maybe one of the seniors can confirm this. But when Maitreya Rishi speaks to Vidura, you know, when Vidura, so what happens is, this is another classic case of, you know, the previous few sessions, it said that the quality of Vaishnava, he never wastes time. At one point, Vidura actually got chucked out of the kingdom. Right? Duryodhana actually got him chucked out because he was speaking too much against the kingdom. What did Vidura do? Did he go back into his room and start moping? No. He thought, okay, how do I use this time? He went on pilgrimage. Again, intensifying his sadhana, intensifying his spiritual practices, meeting great devotees, right? And one of the key personalities he met was Maitreya Rishi. And Vidura proved himself such a top-class devotee that Maitreya Rishi in the Mahabharata actually tells Vidura that he reveals to him that, okay, Krishna, because what's happening now, that whilst Vidura is on pilgrimage, the war's happened, everything's finished, Krishna has unmanifested his pastimes, he's left the material, you know, left our material vision. Maitreya Rishi reveals that to Vidura, and he tells him that one of the last things that Krishna told me was, how's Vidura? I'm always going to remember Vidura's devotion and his attendance to his dharma. Isn't that amazing? So Vidura actually basically has gone down in history as one of the greatest personalities. He dealt with his cards in the best way possible. Now, coming back to the advice that he's giving here, one of the things that also Vidura does here, is he doesn't just give Vidura intellectual advice. Okay, intellectuals may often speak from the perspective of how they think the world should be. But if you look at Krishna, if you look at the Vaishnavas, you look at Prabhupada, they don't do that. They actually speak from how the world actually is. Right? We are not here to mollycoddle personalities. There's a time, mollycoddle means like, you know, like, or just giving people material comfort and gentle words. There's a time for giving the gentleness and compassion, but there's also a time where you have to just, as they say in common parlance, lay it down raw. And this is what Vidura is doing here, right? It's actually interesting, when Dhritarashtra lost his whole situation, you know, three people gave him advice. Vyasdev told him that this is just karma. It's your karma that you're in this situation. Sanjaya, you know, his servant, the one who narrated the Bhagavad Gita to him, said to him that you are the cause of all the miseries that are happening in the world, which is a bit of a tough piece of advice from his own minister. Vidura said to him, you need to now practically pack your bags, so to speak, and get out of here. It's said that out of the three pieces of advice, Dhritarashtra, do you know which advice he preferred the most? Vyasdev's, the first. Why? Because he just accepted that it's karma, I don't have to do anything, I just have to go with the flow. Often when people listen to spiritual katha, they just think, they like to listen and listen and listen, and especially when it talks about how we have no role to play, it's all karma. So they're like, yes, we just go with the flow, what can we do? What can we do? There's nothing we can do, right? This is often what happens, right? You know, armchair philosophers, they sit in their houses. You know, sometimes you have people say, I love Krishna. But what are you going to do about it? So actually, Dhritarashtra preferred Vyasdev's advice. Okay, it's my karma. I just have to run with it now. Sanjaya's advice was, okay, you're giving me these tough words, but what can I do? But Vidura's advice, he didn't like the most. Why? Because it now forces you to do something. Right? Often we find that, you know, when we're preaching to people, you can give them all sorts of wonderful katha, but at the moment you try and tell them, okay, now, action points. You know, after a meeting of action points, now we have to set some action points. Then they're like, sorry, do we have to actually do something now? Right? This is something that we have to actually be conscious of. There's one Sangha group that I go to. It's been going for many years, and the people of it are nice, wonderful devotees. Obviously, they're at different stages. So you get some people in there that have actually been there for many years, but they still haven't fully taken up the spiritual process. Now, remember, this Sangha group is going on for like 10 years. And, you know, you'd think that at this point, you can start to give them a bit more, you know, strongly. And so then now with this whole virus situation, I had a Sangha session with them last week. I'm sure they won't mind me saying this because, you know. And basically, after a long time, because a lot of them are still like eating meat and stuff. And now that we're like, you know, we're discussing how the coronavirus is directly linked to, you know, animal killing and stuff. So I said, look, just give up the meat. Just stop it. It's not even like giving them philosophical understanding. It's just like giving them rightly. And, you know, so like, it's all well and good hearing the katha, but sometimes you just have to give it to them straight and give them a practical instruction that you have to do. So this is what Vidura is giving to Dhritarashtra. Not just philosophy, but action points. So this is also what Vaishnav culture is about. And this is something that Dhritarashtra is often guilty of. See, one thing it said in the Mahabharata that Dhritarashtra was a classic case of someone who actually liked to listen to instructions. He liked him when Vidura gave him advice. The problem was, he was too attached and too weak. And especially when Vidura comes out and then Shakuni and Duryodhana comes in, that's it, mind just gets changed again. Right? So the thing is that as well as listening to instructions, you also have to have your own willpower, discipline, right? Discipline to actually act on those instructions. Okay? So these are some of the things that came out from this thing. And also, just one last thing, like I said with Dhritarashtra's case, that he was given a lot of sympathy in his kingdom, but he was not given the right tools to deal with this situation. You have to give people training, otherwise they'll become narcissistic. One sees that often in the modern system, especially in the modern education, when people are behaving badly, nowadays the trend is to give them a lot of sympathy, especially in schools, when a kid is behaving badly. Oh, poor kid. oh, you know, you're having problems at home. Oh, maybe he's got an abusive situation. You know, family's abusive, so he's getting all these things. That's well and good. But what you're doing is you're just reinforcing his sense of that chip on his shoulder mood. What you now have to do is that how do you now help him to grow up and deal with the situation in a mature way? Dhritarashtra never got that. You know, the Kaurava dynasty was very kind and soft on him, but part of giving compassion to someone is also giving them the, you know how Prabhupada said you have to give the hammer when you're carving the pot, right? You have to have the hammer to carve it on one side. The guru has to carve with the, you know, like the hand on one side, the soft approach with the tough approach, the hammer on the other side, right? So this is something that we can also learn from with ourselves, with the fellow Vaishnavas, when you're giving them the best you can. And one of the things that Vidura also exemplifies, that as Vaishnavas, we're here to have affection for everyone, right? We're here to give them the best, but not necessarily that we have to be attached to everyone in an emotional way. Vidura was the best friend for Dhritarashtra because he had a lot of affection for him, but affection means you guide them positively, but you do not lose your discrimination on how they are. You know what I mean? Vidura knew exactly how Dhritarashtra is. That's why Vidura is able to foil Dhritarashtra's plans. But at the same time, he still loved him and still tried to guide him in the best way possible. Whereas when you're attached to someone, like the way in which Dhritarashtra was attached to Duryodhan, it means that you lose all your sense of discrimination and you just basically go with the emotions and just go with whatever schemes that they go with because you don't want to upset them. But real friendship means that you're not afraid of upsetting them for the greater good. Okay, so I'll stop there. We have about 5 minutes left. Any last comments, questions, or queries from anyone?